Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right. Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. My name is Scott McKenzie, your host. I am your industrial cheerleader. I am so glad that you found time in your schedule to be able to be with us at the Industrial Talk. I'm coming live from the Industrial War Room. Everybody knows what a war room is. That's where things are happening and things get done. And so we're here, Industrial War Room. We've got some administrative stuff to talk to. We've got a great interview with a roundtable of millennials that are, you know, share with them their thoughts about what's going on in this market and being a part of the industrial space. And then we're going to also talk about some new segments. And I'm so glad that you're here. So let's get going, man. Let's stop wasting time. Hey, thank you very much for joining once again the Industrial Talk Podcast as I work my technology and all that stuff out there. Anyway, we've got some stuff that we need to cover right off the hand. We're going to be Industrial Talk is going to be producing a daily, hopefully daily, we're going to sure try for that, a daily business development and workshop, but it's all going to be, you know, via the podcast, and it's going to specifically look at business development, sales, marketing, branding, and how do you take advantage of this growing marketplace and the opportunities that exist within the industrial space, because quite frankly, it's happening, and how do you position you, your company, in a way to leverage whatever opportunities come your way. So that's what that program's all about, and it's all free. Don't worry about that. It's out there on my YouTube channel. It'll be, you know, segmented in a proper way. So once again, it is a business development, marketing, sales, branding workshop, and it is really geared toward being able to take advantage of the new things that are taking place in this market. So stay tuned. It's going to be great. Another thing that we're going to be doing is I've got I work out quite a bit, so I'll make this quick. I've got a Spotify channel out there called Industrial Pump. It's just music, but it's Industrial Pump, and it's just a collection of music that keeps me motivated. And go out there, check it out. If you don't like it, you don't like it. It's no big deal. It's just out there, and it's called Industrial Pump, out on Spotify. Now, we're going to be talking about anybody, let me back up, anybody that's in the industrial space knows about tailgates, right? I was a journeyman lineman for many years, and we never started a project, not one project, without a proper tailgate to understand the safety, and because we're all about success, safety, all of the good stuff that's out there, and we definitely don't want to get injured. So we're going to be starting a new program called Tailgate Talk, and where we're going to be highlighting, you know, educational stuff, fun stuff like food and so on. So this is going to be the first sort of thing to be able to do, and I hope you guys enjoy, because let's get right on to it. Let's get right on to the Tailgate Talk.
Tailgate Talk number one.
Okay. We're all about education, as you know. And one of the things that you are, so if you are a listener of the Industrial Talk, I'm very interested in books, education, news, opportunity, and this month's BIC magazine. Great people out there. They do a great job at finding the news and getting that information and putting it in this magazine. It's pretty doggone good. I want to direct you to page 28 of that magazine, and it talks about a white paper highlight of U.S. petrochemical projects. So per the first program of talking about business development, sales, market branding, all of that good stuff, know, like, trust, everything that you want to do from a business development point of view, here's another opportunity. And it is on page 28 in the February edition of BIC Magazine. And it breaks down the wonderful opportunities and the transformation of the oil and gas industry. And here it is. And so I would highly recommend it. There's things that we can pull out, and it's exciting. So how do you position yourself? How do you get that information? What do you do? All I can say is that the future's bright really within the industrial space. And highly recommend that you pull up that big magazine, find out that information. But of course, that's just one article. It's full of other stuff too. You know, it's just chock full of conferences and whatever you're liking, it is in there, and it's well written. Great people. Highly recommend it. So don't pass that up.
Number two.
Okay, once again, all about education. I've been reading some books, and I got the latest book that I've been reading is somewhat, I don't know. It's a great book. Don't get me wrong, and it's more of a paper than a book. It's called The Vocation of Business Leader: A Reflection. This is brought to us by the Pontifical Council of Justice and Peace. And inside, it's really the way it's written, but it's a great opportunity, most definitely, to be able to see it's point by point, and it's sort of an interesting read. So once again, if you are interested in finding out more information about being a business leader, a reflection of a business leader, the vocation of it, this comes from a more a unique perspective, and I highly recommend, and they really highlight the necessity for leaders to create stability, optimization, and of course expand, and that's what we're all about here. So, Vocation of a Business Leader, it is a Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, and it's more of a white paper, an extensive white paper than anything else, so read it. It's great. I truly enjoy the reading, and you can sit down and read it within. Me being a slow reader, it takes me a little longer, but if you're an average reader, you could probably do it in about an hour or so. So anyway, that's the latest and greatest. So anything else out there? Anybody? Anybody out there? No. Okay, let's get on with the interview here. Once again, I was at the IMC 2017 conference. This was sponsored by the wonderful people at ReliabilityWeb.com, and part of the interview, or part of the opportunity that I was there, I was able to interview a ton of people, as you are well aware. But one of the most enjoyable interviews I had was with a roundtable discussion with millennials of what would motivate people, or what would motivate that age group to get, one, into the industrial space, and two, how do you retain them? What do you need to do? And so I don't have the answers, but you know, those that roundtable was quite enjoyable, and so it's passed back and forth, but it's still a great conversation. So once again, this is a roundtable discussion on recruiting and retaining millennials with millennials, because for me personally, within the industrial world, I think we could do a better job at marketing and bringing more people in. So without further ado, this is the roundtable discussion that was at the IMC 2017 conference in Bonita Springs, brought to you by ReliabilityWeb.com. Great people. Go to their stuff if you want to know anything about reliability. So here you go. All right, welcome to the IMC. That's International Maintenance Conference 2017. I've got a panel of really young people here, and we're going to talk a little bit about millennials. We're going to talk about how we are going to backfill the need, the necessity to be able to fill these jobs that are coming out, specifically from a reliability perspective. And I'm just really glad that Wesley's here, and we got Tara, we've got David, we've got Robert, and we've got a gentleman by the name of Buddy. You know, I always think of the show Buddy, you know, because it's Christmas and all that good stuff. So we're going to go round table. We're going to talk a little bit about what they see some of the challenges are, and then we're going to start talking a little bit about solutions. How does that sound? Everybody good with that? All right. So as we know, from an industrial point of view and from the space in general, how do we as leaders, you guys are leaders, young leaders, how do you begin to address the necessity to be able to backfill or bring in new talent when there are so many other options that exist out there? There's a lot of shiny things out there. How are you doing it specifically from your company, Tara? How are you getting that?
So at Lifecycle Engineering, we're actually helping companies try to figure out what their strategies are to bring in new talent, as you said, also to make sure that that the knowledge assets that are walking out the door are being captured. So there's a lot that's being lost. There's a lot of technology that's going to help us to be able to...
do more with less?
Well, maybe, or there's a lot of different things go through my mind, so I won't talk too long about this, but especially in the learning community right now, we are trying to balance the way people like to learn now, which is not sitting in a classroom with a lecture. It's actually getting bite-sized information at the point of need and then being able to apply what you learn immediately in a relevant situation or in a live situation or at least a very close to real-life scenario. So that's how people like to learn. You have another issue of people leaving the workforce, and then there's a huge knowledge gap that goes along with that. How do you capture everything that they have as they're leaving out the door? You have technology that's coming in that can help us to be more efficient with how we give people information. So how do you balance all of that and still make sure that people also know how to critically think, that they're not just Googling something right away, learning it for 1 second?
But that's the world we live in. How do, I guarantee you, you're going to look at me and you're going to say, oh, that's Scott McKenzie. Let me grab my handy phone here and I'm going to Google who he is. That's just natural.
It's a balance there too, though, right? Because there's a benefit to that. So the guy who's been working there for 40 years, who memorized that machine and knows every single perfect little piece of how that baby works, he's going out the door, but maybe we don't need to memorize. Maybe we need to instead have all the information at our fingertips when we need it and teach people skills about critical thinking, about problem solving, about troubleshooting, about moving from A to B when you have all that information. So maybe there are different skills that might be attractive to the new workforce. I like the term manual arts for crafts. It's something that... And oh my gosh, the guy's gonna, I feel so bad. The man from Cheers who yes, John Ratzenberger. So he has this whole, he started this whole organization that gets kids interested and high schoolers interested in the manual arts. And I really like that term. So I think we need to rebrand.
I don't understand what manual arts,
like working with your hands, being a millwright, like being an electrician, like being a carpenter, like rebranding.
Okay,
it.
But here's the liability aspect. When I was going through high school, because I wasn't one of those, quote, performers, I was in my shop class, and I did do a lot of shop stuff.
Right.
And I learned how to use my hands.
Working with your hands.
But that's not the case today. I guarantee you, unless the schools have changed, I don't hear people talking about I'm in shop.
Do you think people have an innate ability if they, want to tinker? You know,
by the way, we have one mic and we're handing it back and forth. And except for me, I have my own mic. So just bear with the quality as it goes from person to person. It's all good.
So this is speaking as Wesley.
That's Wesley right there.
And so I'm a new product development manager at SD Myers. We maintain and do predictive maintenance for large power transformers, as well as we focus specifically on the industrial marketplace. For specifically transformer management. Now, in addressing Tara's question and Scott's question on just the ability to work with your hands and transferring knowledge from generations, I think just because we like to learn one way or are accustomed to learning one way doesn't mean it's right. Are we going to question generations of deep learning?
Yeah, that's what you guys do. Millennials do. You guys are disruptors, and it's a positive, not a negative. It's mm-hmm. a positive thing that you guys look at the world differently. You gain information differently, and it's, I think, mm-hmm. the risk that I see within the industrial space is that there is a tendency to be stubborn to change. We've done it this way forever. We've always done it that way, and why would we change? But I think that just like anything else, there's an ability to evolve and change on how you learn and how you digest information. You guys, there's the speed at which you see something and make a decision is far greater than when I was, but I wasn't, I'm not, you know, I'm a pretty low bar.
There is no doubt a difference in how we are learning today, but I would say there's also far fewer subject matter experts that universities, that businesses are producing today versus in years past. Now, Scott, to address your question at the beginning of the podcast of what are some steps that we can take today as a young person, me being a young person, to address this issue is I think really focus on the why. So the very crucial reason why I work for the business I work for and why I'm passionate about what I'm passionate about is because of the mission, the vision, and the values. And that's something that a lot of entrepreneurial startups talk about. Yeah. But I think that as large organizations, divisions and departments, such as the reliability division, can take a life of its own with its own mission, its own vision, and its own values that guide that department to success.
David, I'm going to pass it over to you. This is an interesting question or a position. I find today versus when I was coming up through the ranks, for lack of a better term, I didn't really care. I cared about just getting paid and then moving on. And did I take such pride in the passion of what the company stood for? But I think it's more about that today of what that purpose is, that overall purpose. Because from what I understand, the average millennial, and that millennial is from ages, I think I want to say 15 to 35 today, and they stay with the company no longer than 18 months. So if purpose is really sort of the driver, do you find that be the case?
I think it really depends. What you're talking about there with a millennial staying at a company for 18 months or so. I've been in my current position for 2.5 years. I don't know how long I'll stay, but my goal was always at least 3 years. And that 3 years was driven simply by being vested in a retirement account.
See, so that's it.
Man. A simple option like that is, you know, something that could maybe get somebody to stay around for a few years longer.
See, but the real interesting component associated with a lot of these individuals at this particular conference, that is the IMC 2017 conference brought to you by reliabilityweb.com. What's interesting is that a lot of these individuals have been in this particular, the gentleman here, Buddy, you've been doing this for 35 years plus, 38 years, if I remember correctly. And yet you, and it's not a knock or anything, I'm just looking to get vested right now. I'm trying to learn as much as I can, and then I'm going to see what the future holds. And even if I had a noble purpose, one that what saves lives or something, you would still probably be looking. Is that true? It's not. I'm not trying to put you on.
No, it's like no. You hit the nail on the head, and to some extent. And one of the things millennials or my generation, we, at least me personally, I pride myself on being incredibly mobile. Nothing ties me down. I can do whatever I want. And that's a product of, I'm going to blame this on our parents' generation. They told us that we could do whatever we want, and we went ahead and we did whatever we want.
And you always got first place trophies. Exactly. And it's like, that's the best things trophies in the world, baby.
Yes. And, you know, and my personal beliefs are like, I don't agree with participation trophies, that kind of stuff. That's a whole different discussion.
Oh, no. Everybody out there believes that you do, and it's just part of it now.
But one of the things that the advantage of being mobile is millennials see moving from company to company is a way to improve their salary.
See, and that's and Robert, I pose this to you. That was never a situation where everybody, if I submitted my resume, and my resume had multiple, well, why were you there just for 18 months? And then you changed another job, and why were you there for just 6 months there? That is out the door now, because you're going to change, and you're going to change. Whether you like it or not, you're going to change, and I know you will too, because you guys are very talented and capable. And the reality is, how do you, as a business owner, operator, manager, whatever you are, how do you know that there's this dynamic, there's a level of skills and abilities and intellectual capital, and it's going to only be there? I mean, you've got to be proactive in knowing that, let's say, that in the case of David, he's going to be gone in 2 years, 3 years.
So Robert Poche from Jacobs Engineering, and you know, so my viewpoint may be a little bit skewed because I'm, you know, we established I'm the second oldest aside from Buddy the Elf, which we're really not sure how old those elves are. But the bottom line is
he's cute nonetheless, cute.
But that's something. So I personally have struggled with because I haven't had that mentality of I'm 3 years and that's it. I love the company I work for. I view it more of as a career than a you know, financial in the moment decision, and personally I've struggled with that as a leader in our organization. And I was at a conference several years ago, and the keynote speaker was talking about the generational gap, generational differences, and I think the reality of it is, as leaders, we just need to recognize that, and if we don't recognize the fact that you're 3 years in and you're vested, we fail.
I guarantee you, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, when the market is tightening, which it will be, and I see your experience, and you think you're going to be sticking around a company for a little while, I'm going to make an offer that you cannot refuse. And that's the realities of the market. And I guarantee you, I'm going to go after you, and I'm going to say, do you like what you're doing over there at Jacob? And you're going to say, yeah, it's the best thing since sliced bread, and I'm going to love it. Now, am I going to put you in trouble here?
No, you're not going to put me in trouble. So we'll start with how much money you're going to offer. No, I'm just kidding. But the reality is, so, you know, Jacob's a great company to work for. It goes back to, we talked about core values, and the fact is, I love Jacob's. I bleed blue, right? So there's a whole lot more that goes in a decision than just the finances.
You're such an apple polisher. Yeah, just kidding.
No, but the reality is, folks like David recognizing. So you know, we talked about it. What is there that we can make? How can we make this very appealing? Because the reality is, there's financial rewards, and then there's unrealistic expectations. So it starts with managing expectations. But what is it that we can make appealing about it? And the reality is, it's different. We have to recognize that what makes it appealing is different. And I don't believe it's purely about money. I'm not saying, you know, money's always a discussion. It's always part of the equation. And we would be remiss if we didn't consider that as a factor. But there are different drivers. There's different things. You know, one of the things that strikes me is, you know, the ability to, you know, work from different environments, different locations, not necessarily, you know, David talked about being not having the need to be tied down to one place. What can we do to make it appealing? I took that as he might want to go explore different opportunities, different locations. What can we do? Jacob's worldwide. What can we do to give him opportunities, not tie him down, not look at what he's doing today, and that recognize that may not be his career path. Understand what it is that Jacob's wants to get from the company, because kind of old school mentality and how I was brought up, probably how you were brought up. You were looking at what can you do for the company. And,
absolutely.
And I think it's turning that question around.
It is.
Recognizing what can the company do for you? And right. The reality is, a company like Jacobs, there's a lot we can do for you.
Now, Buddy.
So understanding what it is you want.
Now, Buddy, you've been around for 38 years. What are you doing? And we had this conversation when we briefly met, and you were saying, okay, this is, I posed the concern and the challenge, or opportunity, shall we say. And what we're talking about is, what are you doing, Buddy? You've been around for 30. How are you cross-pollinating your knowledge of what we do or what you do in reliability to help shepherd? I mean, what are you doing?
Well, I'm glad you asked that.
That's why I get paid big bucks.
This is Buddy Lee. I'm with a company called Aramix. It's an intentional reliability and asset management excellence. That's what it stands for, Aramix. And it's just the, you know, letters for that company. And I am in a unique position at the moment because I am working on my master's in reliability at the University of Tennessee. So I'm actually in class with a lot of millennials at this time and have been for the last 3 years. I also happen to be working on a doctoral program in another university. I'm dual enrolled in both universities. And in that class, I'm with people my own age. And so I get to see this generational difference on a day-to-day basis. And let me tell you something. I am impressed with millennials.
Are you impressed with David? Because he's going to be leaving you in 2 years, well, 3 years maybe.
Let me tell you something. That's okay.
So I'm telling you, man.
That's okay. My first job, I stayed a year and a half. And frankly, I think a lot of people our age, my age, which I'm 57 right now, have a bit of a selective memory on that, because we stepped through some initial jobs fairly quickly back in the day. I'm currently raising two millennials right now. My son is working for a company. He's worked for three or four companies since he was out of high school, and I'm talking like in 8 years. He's worked three or four different places. That does not mean he's doing a bad job at any of those. He is dedicated, and he works, and he shows up for work, and he does what he's supposed to do while he's at that company. But he also has a sense of freedom that I really never had, and frankly, I'm a bit jealous because I like that he has that, and that freedom is afforded to him by the internet. The internet is what changed all of this. It's not the parenting. The parenting has been done for millennia. It's the internet.
David blames you for the parenting. He said, that's okay. I blame my parents.
That's okay. Kids have always blamed their parents, okay? And parents have always said, this generation's worthless. That's been happening since our Aristotle, right?
That's right.
So here's the deal. I believe that the nation and that our industry is in good hands. I really do. I think that the people that are shepherding, the folks that are coming up right now, they may not have the internships that we had at our age when people were going through and getting mentors and internships, but they're doing it informally. I see it every day, and I am impressed with the people that are coming up in the millennial generation. They are doing a great job. They need more experience. There's no doubt about that. They're going to get it. They need some additional training. They're going to get that. And people my age are really letting them down by not transferring our knowledge.
God, you're just feeding the beast here, buddy. You're just feeding the beast. Now, well, you're giving them an excuse.
Yeah,
but I'm just kidding.
The
I
honesty
understand.
Is, I'm being honest. The honesty is, I'm seeing this on at both universities at the same time. These millennials coming up today have laptop computers in class and are doing such advanced things that I never even dreamed about.
Yeah.
And I graduated college the first time in 1987, which wasn't that long ago. And so now they have all of these advantages that we never had, that I was not able to use when I was in school the first time, that I am able to use now. The fact that I can turn in a paper at midnight, okay, and work on it on my own time. The internet has changed everything, and it is fantastic that it has done that. And so I'm going to turn it back over.
No. That's
$8 no, we got to get. We got to come. Then we had to work on it.
Yes, exactly.
And Buddy and Robert, to your points, you know, when you're speaking to a young person about the industry and about asset management and facility management, I think there is a different value proposition in as it relates to the digital world. We are able to manipulate and drive value out of physical assets. There is value in the physical world. We can't live in a digital, in a solely digital world. And I think it takes somebody, for instance, like real estate agents. What draws real estate agents to real estate? They love being able to touch, see, feel, and experience a space. People who, what drives people to reliability? They love being able to solve problems and see drastic change in physical assets.
So, let me ask you this. Are you seeing, go ahead. Are you seeing there's a, like, I'm all about marketing. I'm all about branding and all that good stuff. Is there a proactive marketing that's going on, Tara, about just what Wesley said about that tangible solving problems? Because I think there's a messaging issue here too, Tara.
I agree. I mean, we're kind of circling back to where we started, which I think is great. I do. I think we got some work to do in rebranding what it truly is that maintenance and reliability does. Maintenance is not a bad word. It's a great word. Reliability is an excellent word.
It's only proactivity bad when you go to the dentist
teeth. We were talking, like, you know, Buddy was talking about, you know, our nation. I think from a worldwide perspective, there's a lot that's happening in outside of North America, that's also changing in how we view maintenance and reliability. For example, I was in a session today about obsolescence management, and somebody just raised their hand and was like, what about 3D printing? It's going on in Europe right now, and they're using that in mass transit. There are issues that need to be resolved, but as a world, we can learn from each other. There's also a lot more, there's a lot more opportunities, I think, for youth in other countries and other areas too, that is being, like, and I'm not really sure how they're branding over there, but, you know, in droves, people are coming in to get jobs, which maybe we have to learn from each other.
Yeah, well, let's, on that note, let's sort of take a break real quick. We're going to be right back. We're broadcasting live specifically from the IMC 2017 conference put on by Reliability Web, and I want to give everybody a big, yeah, I guess, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule and not networking and you're sitting here, because we will be right back and we're going to start addressing some of these really interesting questions. All right, you got to mark your calendar for April 23rd through the 27th. And this is a reliability conference that is in Las Vegas, Nevada, brought to you by those wonderful people at reliabilityweb.com. It will have all of the great vendors that are there that are really focused and passionate on reliability, as well as the great content and education. It never ends. Those folks at reliabilityweb.com do a great job. Now, I will be there, just like I was at the IMC 2017 conference in Bonita Springs. So if you missed that, and that was in December, you need to make this one, and it is April. Once again, April 23rd through the 27th. This is in Las Vegas, Nevada. Go out to reliabilityweb.com. Get all the information you can about it. I will be there. I hope to see you, and you have a wonderful day. All right, we're back. This is Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk, and I'm so glad that you are here. This is the IMC 2017 conference. We're broadcasting live. We've got a panel of very capable individuals passionate about their reliability, and I want to make sure that we give that plug to reliabilityweb.com, because they put on a fantastic conference. I got to tell you, it's top-notch. I'm really pleased to be able to broadcast here, and honored most definitely. Now, we left the last one. We were talking specifically about maybe some solutions. Now, David, we've been teasing you a little bit, but that's okay, because I think that you represent that mindset, and it's not a reflection on your inabilities or whatever it might be. It is just a reality of who you are and how you look at life. Now, if you had an opportunity, what do you think would be an incentive program to attract you, to retain you? What do you think that would look like, and what's meaningful to you?
So this is David Gisborne. I'm with DC Water.
Love how he says water.
Water, you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. It's better than buddy.
What you described is interesting. My company is a former governmental organization, and I wouldn't say it suffers, but it has a lot of the hangover from a previous generation of way of doing things, a bureaucratic environment. And really, for me, the incentives to stay would be to develop a career path. And a career path is not only at my position, but across the organization, whether that be a frontline operator, a maintenance technician, or young engineers like myself. In my opinion, it's relatively simple, but we just don't have that in our organization.
So how does one like you affect that change? So what I hear you, you're saying, okay, I want to get this experience, and I'm going to continue to get this experience, but really I'm going to be looking for a company that has a sort of a clear demarcation of a path that I could say, yeah, if I do this, I can do this, and I go here, and I do this, and so on and so forth. And then I got to ask the question, is money a component of that?
Obviously, money is a component. Robert brought it up before, but it is not the be-all and end-all. If money was the be-all and end-all, I wouldn't be in reliability. I would be working in a bank, essentially, or trading Bitcoin.
yeah, we had that conversation. Yeah, that's... Well, good luck with that.
And it goes back to what Wesley said before. There is a vision and value, and I work in a water utility because the thing I believe in most is that a water utility has the biggest impact on the environment. And here's where you could probably turn that around and say us millennials are all greenies and tree huggers.
I wouldn't do that to you. I respect you very much.
So that is part of it is the what my company does, which is to treat wastewater every day.
I mean, but I understand that, and that's important, and I realize that that's important stuff, and that is important to the community and the neighborhood and all of that associated with that. How do you? And this has always been a challenge or a conundrum. Yes, I did say conundrum. I don't know how to spell it, but I did say it. In a business that is generally bureaucratic, to affect change to your level, to your standards? Because I don't have an answer to that. I mean, that's top-down recognition of, wow, we can do things better, stronger, faster. That's a Steve Austin reference, right, buddy? Better, stronger, faster. And be able to do that, but you've got to have that top-down leadership. But how? Huh? To satisfy you, because it's all about you.
And that is the trouble. How do I project my thoughts without making it all about myself? So.
That's right. Robert, what do you do?
So I think you categorized it wrong. I don't...
Me?
You. Scott.
Okay, good deal, man.
It's a conundrum. So you talked about bureaucracy and bureaucratic organizations and how it's inherent and it's part of this industry. And I would argue that point to say that the real movers and shakers, the success stories in this industry, they aren't bureaucratic. So I think a big part of it is overcoming that bureaucracy and having a different mindset. You know, one of the things that I've just observed is every single one of us has these fancy iPhones in front of us. Wesley has two of them.
He's real important.
Exactly.
Oh, the other millennial speaks up, and he's got two as
David
well.
David has two and a Fitbit. That'd be three. So, wait.
Buddy.
So the reality is we're all coming of age. We're all, you know, this is a statement that just sticks with me. It's disrupt or be disrupted. So the reality is we're all coming around, we're all warming up to technology. As I look across the agenda for this conference, you know, I think something over 30% was focused, probably more than that. I just looked at the ones with the words Internet of Condition Monitoring, Internet of Things, Industrial Internet of Things. Jacobs has what we call a Jacobs Connected Enterprise, and so we're really focused and committed to leveraging technology from a connected facility perspective, from a cybersecurity perspective. The reality is that's part of our lives, all of us, regardless of our age. My 93-year-old grandmother has a smartphone. The bottom line is that's the world we live in. Whether we like it or not, that's where we're going. So let's take advantage of that. You know, bureaucratic organizations are a piece of it, but the reality is let's make it appealing. Instead of fighting it, we talked about...
Absolutely agree.
We talked about the skilled workforce. And when you bring technology to them, their initial resistance might have, but at the end of the day, you can teach them, you can demonstrate how they really like it. Makes their jobs easier. So... what I'm trying to say is I think it's the wrong perspective. How do we measure success? I think it changes. So we need to recognize what success is.
What fascinates me, and to your point about technology, that genie's out of the bottle and has been out of the bottle, and it's rapidly expanding and changing and growing, and the speed at which technology is changing is fantastic. And if you're a company, you've got to recognize that speed, and even if you're not in the game, it's going to be difficult to catch up and be a part of that constant growth of that technology. And from a reliability point of view, it leverages heavily on technology and the changes. That I mean, it's fantastic. You're absolutely spot on. And for me, and I look at David and I look at others, that would if I had a company that recognized that, who, like you said, you know, disrupt or be disrupted or whatever my, you know, if I knew that the company did that, I would hang on and I would just stick there because I'm thinking, okay, I'm gonna ride this bad boy out because it's gonna be fun.
Oil sampling with drones. I mean, every single one of us would go have fun with drones.
That's right, baby. And it's great because I guarantee you don't know what the future holds. You might have an idea, but I guarantee you there's somebody out there who's going to, whatever it might be. It always fascinates me. What do you think? I bet you're working with, buddy, you're working with young people who are, well, at the University of Tennessee. I guarantee you that's what makes it so energetic.
Yeah, it really is. And who would have dreamed of Uber 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Uber? I mean, talk about disruptive.
Yeah.
You know, to the taxi industry. And going back to reliability, I'm privy to a lot of things through the University of Tennessee's program. They have a master's degree in reliability that I'm in, and they are positioning and putting senior engineering students and first year graduate students in the engineering department into industries. And believe it or not, they've already done close to 1,200 students out there in industry where they are working in their very first job and they are making a difference in the reliability of plants. So we have a number of them, Schlumberger, DuPont, et cetera, that are employing these young people to do some things that, you know, the Jacobs, thank you very much for correcting me, which I didn't know. And I appreciate that very much because I'm very high on what the university is doing with getting these folks involved in reliability. The truth is automation is going to go forward. There's no stopping this train.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No. Nope.
And people are going to have a whole new skill set in order to be able to deal with this train of automation that's coming down the tracks, and it's coming fast. Drones with oil analysis, my gosh, that was a surprise for me today, too. I'm really excited about what the future
holds. You mean somebody
holds.
Actually did talk about drones for...
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
And I want to be a drone pilot.
Yeah. And so we are seeing, it's not the days of horses and buggy whips. You know, that day is gone in my parents' generation. In our generation, the day of the manual labor of being, you know, physically carrying part A to part B, physically fixing things, is going to be carried out by robots in the future. And somebody's got to fix those robots. Somebody's going to know how to program those robots. We are going to see a technological transformation over the next 30 years that is going to astound all of us.
Oh, you know, that is a fact. And once again, what you think is going to happen is not going to happen. It's going to even be further ahead and blow you away.
Better.
And better.
Yeah,
and it
better.
Is. There's nothing to fear about that.
Yeah. So I've really enjoyed my time at the university. It's been really eye-opening to go back to school after about 30 years and see what's coming down the pike. And so for anyone who's listening to this that has any concerns about the future, let me put those to rest for you. This generation coming along is going to be able to do things far better, far faster, far in a better way than we've ever conceived up to this point. And I really think that things are going to be just fine.
Well, geez, on that note, I feel warm and fuzzy, and I don't feel so bad about David. Because I was feeling a lot bad about David, but now I feel warm and fuzzy about David. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up, and I know that we've got to get to the events and food and all that fun activity. And once again, thank you very much. I want to thank you to Wesley, and they had to run out. Wesley and Tara had to run out to another meeting. We got David here, and we got Robert, and we got Buddy. And really, thank you very much for your time and participating in this roundtable. I thought it was a lot of fun. And I want to just say thank you for, once again, IMC 2017 for allowing Industrial Talk Podcast to be here and broadcast live and get to connect with some really talented individuals. With that said, I am signing off. Thank you very much. Have a safe day. Hey, once again, this is Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk. If you like what you're listening to, please feel free to sign up for the free podcast as well as the blogs. I'll try to keep it all relevant to your business and hopefully be able to provide some insight into what we do at Industrial Talk and what you do as a professional. Hope to see you soon. Thank you. All right, let's wrap this thing up. Let's put it into the can for the show. I would like to thank once again the wonderful group of people that spent time at the IMC 2017 conference talk, specifically about millennials and how to retain them and all that good stuff. And I appreciate the opportunity that Reliability Web gave me to be able to have that conversation with them. Please go out, visit the strategic partners that are a part of this industrial podcast, and they are Leaf Services LLC. We've got the PQ Group. We've got Cosmire Marine. So I appreciate all that they do, and I really appreciate your time. And I thank you very much for listening to the Industrial Talk podcast. And we're going to be we're going to be back next week with another one. So take care, be safe, you know that, and have a wonderful week.